Welcome back to our last episode in the Making Scratch mini-series. We are so excited to have Nick Hernandez from Mokoche to tell us a little bit about the poultry industry in Indian Country. Hey, Nick. Welcome to the podcast. We're excited to have you for our special mini-series, Making Scratch. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came up with the idea for Mokoche?
Yes. Happy to be here. My name is Nick Hernandez. I am the president and CEO of Mokoche Agriculture Development. We are a grassroots organization based on the Pioneer Indian Reservation, home to the Ogallala Lakota Oyate, or also known as the and I'm a tribal member of the Ogallala Sioux tribe. Born and raised here, and then raising my two boys, Ailey Jackson, Kai Tindo here, and I started Mokoche agriculture. Mokoche in the Lakota language means homelands. And so that's kind of the relevance to the title of the organization and to the work that we are engaged in developing. The organization will actually be turning 5 years old here in June 17th.
That's amazing.
A little older than that, but as an entity, right, as a federal entity, we'll be turning, on June 17th, we'll be turning 5 years as an entity.
Congratulations.
Yes. But the focus of the organization is to develop indigenous agriculture and food systems designed to regenerate equitable and healthy communities, economies, and our environment. But the overall idea of the organization stemmed from my relationship I had with my late grandmother, Roberta Ironcloud, and the idea of wanting to enter after graduating from my undergrad, move back home. And right, I was just like energetic, you know, passionate, you know, looking to make change and have this Western knowledge of wanting to make change within my community. And I was in the garden with my grandmother, pulling out all these fruits and vegetables and talking with her as we always did. And I told her that, you know, I was trying to figure out my life, what I wanted to do. And then the light bulb went off when I looked down and saw all these fruits and vegetables in my hands and got the idea that I want to engage. I want to re-engage, reconnect myself back to my home through food production. And then asked her, like, you know, can you help me to do this? And her words that always shine through and that I always remember in my heart is that she stood up and she said, you know, grandson, turn around. And where I live now was basically this open farm, was basically this open cropland that once housed the, you know, we grew wheat and stuff here. And she said, you have 40 acres in front of you. You can do with whatever you want to do. But the thing about it is that you actually have to go and do it. I can't show you. You actually have to go and do this. And so that was like the push. That was the motivation to do the work I've been doing, you know, since coming home in 2006. And a lot of ideas transformed and grew from that initial push and the idea of wanting to engage myself back with my community, and started the organization as kind of that next level of rebuilding, of reconnecting and re-engaging my community through the foundation of life, right, which is food. And now the forethought and the future of food systems. So that's kind of a little bit of the origin of the work that we've doing, and a little bit about my life and the road that I've been able to create.
I love that. And it sounds like your work's very important to you. So what do you think is the part of your work that you're most proud of?
I mean, the part of the work that I'm most proud of is the fact that I've been able to take an idea, right, of wanting to engage through food, because in a lot of indigenous cultures, and especially in life, food is the foundation of creating community, of creating relationships, and especially within my Lakota, you know, Ogallala, Lakota and Ocheti Shakoi Nation, it is the symbolism and the relationship of bringing life together, and then also the passing of life. What I'm really fond of and really passionate about is being able to share a lot of this work. And now having my own organization and growing out this team to be able to bring in team members and highlight their passions for this work. And to watch it grow, you know, taking it from an idea from one employee, you know, 5 years ago to now, there's 14 total employees now. But to be able to create an organization that creates space to share out with multiple generations, all the way from, you know, the youngest of, I mean, my son is 8 years old, all the way to the elder generation, and to be able to make that interaction through food, which we've been so displaced from for multiple generations. And so that's what I'm really excited about, is to keep growing the idea and the opportunity of engaging multiple generations through food.
So you've mentioned a little bit about your grandmother bringing you to this work. What are the cultural traditions that impact your work and those that you work with?
The cultural traditions that we engage with and that are impactful is that we have a lot of terminology, you know, throughout the years, especially in working it around like food sovereignty, right? We're into the idea and the terminology of like regenerative practices. But what I've been finding out, especially with multiple mentorships and engaging with various ecosystems since I've been doing this work for over 15 years, is the idea that what I'm doing is basically reconnecting to a natural ecosystem that has been here and that we've been disconnected from. And so, you know, learning that a lot of what we are doing is not new, right? It's more modernized, but that a lot of our teaching is basically grounded in how we as a human population feel the need and need the need of reconnecting ourselves back to the environment for which we've been disconnected for multiple generations. I mean, probably even centuries. But that is the most, you know, traditional, long-sought connection that we needed. And so that's what's really has been the passion to be able to do this work is being able to fill that energy by, you know, not only raising these foods, but also growing these foods, harvesting these foods, and then being able to create something that in all aspects, you know, has been traditional. And learning about those ecosystems, those animals, and then to be able to hear the stories that have been passed on through multiple generations, and being more open and understanding to the homelands for which we live, and especially in reservations, right? Reservations were designed to separate ourselves from, you know, the civilized world. Before here, I mean, that's the most traditional aspect of the world that we live, of the land that we live in, is that for millennia, we've lived off of these lands, and now turning them into these Western concepts, right, is something new to an entire population of people. But it's been a traditional way of life for millennia. And that's what we're basically reconnecting back to, is more of that traditional off the grid or whatever we want to term it. It's more of our human reconnecting back to our environment, back to our Unchi Macaw, our Mother Earth.
Yeah, I always find it interesting when people are like, oh yeah, we're going to start no-till farming. And I'm like, man, people have been doing that for centuries.
Yeah.
So the title of our series is Making Scratch, which refers to poultry. So why poultry with Makoche?
I mean, that kind of, it stems back to the relationships I had with my previous organization. I used to work for Thunder Valley CDC as the founding initiative director of the Food Sovereignty Initiative. And one of my mentors, Ronaldo Mariquin, Heselet Mariquin, now of Regenerative Agriculture Alliance, or his for-profit is the Tree Range Farms. I met him in 2016. And he invited me up to his farm, and he was into aquaponics at that time, and then he was designing a lot of poultry systems. And then we connected, you know, made it a partnership, made a bond, you know, made a strong relationship. And he's been my mentor ever since. But through that mentor relationship, we developed a egg production system, a regenerative production system. And he, you know, I learned about the terms, right, of regenerative and regenerative practices as we developed out this egg production farm. And we built this farm, and it was probably a quarter acre farm. And we designed it with passive solar design. We designed it to be a processing kitchen for the eggs, you know, both having a regenerative focus, but also with the Western spaces of being able to turn it into a food product also. So being able to take it to multiple systems. But what we did within the paddocks is, like, we planted local bush bearing fruits, you know, elderberries and buffalo berries and choke cherries. But throughout that entire process, especially coming from a mind frame that I was pushing, right? I was talking about, we live in a food desert, you know, we live in poverty, and we have all of these disparities before us, which is the reality. But my mind frame, my way of thinking was changed when I brought him on site, when we started building this space. And I was talking about the demographics to him and stuff, you know, that we have only 3 grocery stores and 10 convenience stores of processed foods, and had all these negative statistics, you know, going. And he stopped me, you know, in my presentation, and he said, turn around. He said the same thing, like, to my grandma. My grandma said, turn around. He's like, what do you see out there? Look over there in that creek. And I said, what species or plants are down there? And I said, well, there's choke cherries and buffalo berries and plums and different trees and grasses and different, you know, different plants that exist down there. And he said, correct. And then he's like, what animals exist here? And I was like, there's turkeys and rabbits and antelope and deer, and we have buffalo, and there's cattle all over ranging. He's like, exactly. He's like, you don't live in a food desert. You actually live in an oasis. You were just disconnected from what exists over there to what you're trying to develop here. And so what we need to do is to be able to take what's over there and bring it forth, so then that we can interact with it. And that was a total mind. It was a total mind change that day. And so with poultry and engaging with poultry and doing these regenerative practices, like paddock development and putting in these trees, because poultry is a jungle fowl. I had to learn about that, learn about how to interact with chickens and create their ecosystems. But when I started to learn about poultry, I was also learning about the buffalo. The buffalo are our most traditional foods, especially of the Great Plains, of the Upper Great Plains. And for many tribes, they are. We have a relationship with one of the most traditional and cultural relevant animals of time. But for us, I really started to see how chickens and buffalo really started to learn about their ecosystems, but how what they do in taking care of the environment, and not only scratching, turning soil, providing fertilizer, right, in living under these various ecosystems. I really started to learn that. But I was really fond of chickens, because chickens are such a system that are domesticated. They've been domesticated for centuries, but they're a manageable system that we could be able to teach from in a square foot of understanding. In that understanding, we could scale out systems for being able to produce more food in either eggs or meat production. And for larger animals like buffalo, which is one of our most traditional foods, we need larger acreages of land. And coming from a reservation where land access is very hard to get into, and it's far and few, to be able to develop larger ranches for buffalo take a lot of money. But to be able to raise chickens, you know, with regenerative practices, but also engage in the diversity for what their ecosystems can be created from, we were able to take what we saw on the with the foliage and the creek beds and expand that operation and be able to take an animal from the smallest of scale and be able to build out a local natural ecosystem that is true to our environment, and be able to engage in an animal on a smaller square foot for huge opportunities, for huge applications in diversity. And so chickens have been one of those things I've been fond of from learning from Rahi, because he grew up in the jungle. He grew up with chickens. He grew up in Guatemala. And so I really started to learn about the engagement of chickens, but also how we can utilize them more than just a mono focus of production, but in a production of developing ecosystems that benefit more of the natural elements of where we live. And so that's how I got engaged into poultry production, was through what I call him, the Guatemalan God, and he's a great friend. But that's how I got engaged in poultry.
Yeah, growing up, we always had guinea fowl, because we had bird dogs, and guinea fowl are really great about eating the ticks out of your yard. And so using, you know, a more natural way, you know, you can go in and spray for ticks, but being able to use those guineas and then being able to eat the guineas later, like, it was, I can see the connection there that you've drawn. So how does Makoche help provide pathways for tribal citizens to become producers?
So as an organization, we have five strategic initiatives that we've developed throughout this time. And like our mission is to develop indigenous agriculture and food systems. And our vision is for healthy growing homelands. And within that umbrella, right, of our mission and our vision, we developed five strategic initiatives, not programs, because programs don't work on reservations. They're more for, they're more identified within, like I say, like tribes and programs. But for us, is our focus is to develop systems. So we're a systems of design and development organization. And so within that, we have five initiatives that we operate today. One is a food hub initiative. So we want to develop place and space, not only to be able to process and store foods, but to be able to locally supply and engage with producers and get them from one market to the next. Our second initiative is the regenerative production farm system. And so this is an actual, we're developing the first community accessible production farm on our reservation. It's 40 acres. And how, and what we're doing there is we're developing meat production units. And on the farm, we look to develop three of these units that will raise meat birds in a regenerative manner. Free range alleys, and then alley crop them with trees and fruit bearing trees. But also we are developing the first USDA certified poultry processing plant on the farm. And we should have our inspection by July. So we're working with the USDA on that. Our third initiative is we have the Food Systems Institute. And so a lot of these is creating place and space, but we also have to develop the education and training for our community members to be able to engage in a lot of the food systems development. And so for the FSI program, Food Systems Institute is on workforce development, education, and training. That could be through like curriculum development, through food safety, you know, product development, and every opportunity underneath that. And that's to actually engage both youth, families, and entrepreneurs. The fourth initiative that we have is the Bio-Based Solutions Initiative, formerly our Hemp Development Initiative. And we took that idea and terminology and expanded it to more diverse opportunities, because hemp has an application for diverse opportunities, but we didn't want to focus on one crop of development. And so for bio-based, we're looking at utilizing hemp for its multiple uses, both within heating, insulation, food production, textiles, because we have a need for not only insulating and heating our homes, but the need for other sources of food, but also to regenerate our soil, for which hemp as a crop can be able to do. And our last one of our initiative is called the Ocheti Shakoe Food Systems Alliance. And the alliance on its foundation is on advocacy and policy development. And so we're working on adopting the tribal motto food code, because that's what our focus is on developing our own food code for our own food system that is relative to our community. And so the aspects of a lot of these initiatives are actually rooted in the workforce that we hire, but also in the development of the next generation of workforce focusing on indigenous agriculture and food systems within our community. And so we engage a lot through education, training, curriculum development, but also production. One of the things, especially around poultry, that we have is we have the Regenerative Poultry Producers Program. And for the last 5 years, we've been engaging every year annually between 8 and 14 families who utilize a chicken tractor, raise 75 birds, and at the end of the season are able to harvest and process and take home over 250 pounds of locally sourced, lean, nutrient-dense protein back to their homes, for which they feed themselves as a household or their community or family. And so these are some of the opportunities we engage with communities is being able to teach them the many aspects of engaging, interacting, and raising poultry. But we also share with them the business plan towards being entrepreneurs, you know, the connection to land, and the aspects of actually becoming more food secure and more food sovereign within their own homes. And so those are some of the aspects, and specifically with poultry, because poultry is one of our main focuses on our farm because of how we can easily interact and engage with poultry, and the huge magnitude from putting poultry on the land to being able to grow and feed back into the soil that diversity of more local nutrient dense foods by basically interacting with chickens back into the soil, which we could do with large animals, but it takes a lot more land and we don't have a lot of land to interact with.
Well, and not only does it take more land, but it takes more input, because chickens are almost a one-to-one, 1 pound of feed to 1 pound of meat, like exactly. Direct correlations. So with the assistance that you provide, your initiatives, other programs, grants, and funding, what changes are you seeing in the poultry industry in Indian country?
What I'm seeing is that we've been in this work for over 5 years now, and specifically with poultry. What we have been finding out is that there's not a lot of indigenous, you know, Native American communities that are in poultry. And we've been creating partnerships and interacting with, you know, Native and non-Native producers. I mean, we've been to University of Arkansas's, you know, Tyson's Food Research Facility for poultry one-on-one training. We've been to Regenerative Agriculture Alliance's Stacyville processing plant. So we've been able to see like these different plants that are not within Indigenous or Native American communities. But as we have access to a 54-by-8-foot poultry processing trailer that didn't come with any instructions on operations, setting up, you know, no actual guidance, SOPs, HACCP plans. And so for the last 5 years, we have been learning about these things, right? We have been learning about HACCP plans, SOPs, you know, standard operating procedures or practices and whatnot. And so, but we also were reaching out to various networks and TA providers, especially within the USDA, and coming back with nothing. And also making calls to TA providers, and they're like, we'll get back to you when we find somebody. And then weeks later, we get a call from these people who we called 2 weeks saying, hey, we see that you're in the poultry framework. Would you like to be a technical service provider for this organization? And we're like, that was us. we called you looking for TA and you called us back to B. And so we initially found out that, well, one, it's looking like we're the only ones within Indian country developing food systems, especially with poultry on reservations. And two, we're kind of leading a lot of this work, especially from the ground up around poultry systems. And so dubbing ourselves the experts, because now we have hours into it, right? To be an expert in one thing takes 10,000 hours. Well, we can say on developing a HACCP plan or working with chickens, we got about that, you know, in 5 years, which is probably not. I think you need like 10 years, basically. But we're like halfway there. So we become our self-dubbed experts. But it's been a huge learning experience. And especially around engaging with such an animal like poultry, that for a system, right, is not a really an engaging system for smaller communities as it is in, you know, the national supply chain of ag production. And so we're kind of, right. We kind of been learning about that.
Because when you see chicken production, you often think of like factory farms in these big places, yes, or like 50 birds in the back of somebody's house. Yeah. You don't think of it in that in-between space, which I think is what you guys are trying to fill.
Yeah, it's not factory farm, not hive. I mean, we engage in those, but also to be able to feed more than just, right, a household or a smaller community. We also need these scalable systems, which is more farms, a processing plant, right, training, services, workforce development, to be able to, our focus, right, is to be able to feed ourselves first as a community. And a community is 20, there's 20,000 people that live on this reservation.
Right.
And so that's a scalable system that we have to develop, but also train a workforce that agriculture in its Western ideology is not really truly accessible within our community of education and training and also services for the most part. And so we're developing those spaces that haven't existed for a long time.
So with that experience of having your own flock and helping others with their operations, I'd like to end on what advice you would give someone looking to enter this space, or tips for the future of tribal food and ag.
I mean, the one thing that I guess that we share is not only as an organization, but myself as a community member who's been interacting with chickens for, you know, over 15 years, is that chickens, you know, they serve multiple purposes, right? Most animals, they do serve multiple purposes, but it's also being able to understand what those purposes are. But I really like chickens because it's an animal and it's an ecosystem that you can develop on a small square foot, and it's manageable. I say, as long as you protect them, any animal, as long as you protect it, you know, it'll live a good life, and it'll provide something to your homestead or to your house, you know, either egg production or meat production. But chickens are something that are economically reasonable to be able to get in, right? You can buy, I mean, right now, I think there's like $2 a bird or something. But we raise at my mother's house, she raises 15 egg layers, and that's like a dozen eggs a day. Right. And so now, given the food, the national food system, the cost of foods, I mean, she's never had to buy eggs for the last 5 years since we put in this chicken coop. But also she's producing in abundance and being able to share foods. But the thing about it is that it's not just about raising these animals, right, for food. It's about the nutrients. It's about the value for what that engagement brings to your own health and wellness, and your family's health and wellness, and your community's health and wellness. And we need a lot more agriculture. We need a lot more producers, processors, you know, vendors, you know, canners, because our connection to nutrient dense foods is far and few. and foods that we can grow at home and process and package and store have a huge value on our own health and wellness. And so what I say to people who are interested in getting into this is, you know, take that step. If you want to raise chickens, which I support, because like I said, it's a smaller square foot of opportunity, but the vast return is huge, especially with chickens, because within, you know, 40 square feet, you could have 5 or 10 chickens, produce eggs, build in soil. You could plant trees, bush bearing. So you have to think in diversity also, and not just in raising these birds. And so I really support poultry production on many realms. It's a great thing. I mean, especially interacting with animals. It's a great thing. And it's a great thing to learn, because it's about also food security, food sovereignty, but the shared value of understanding where your food comes from is something we're all missing, where our food comes from, and be able to raise the animals and raise your own food. That's the highest point of reconnecting ourselves back to the environment.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
No problem. Yeah, I mean, if you want to look us up as an organization, as an entity, and follow some of our work and learn, we're all about sharing. We're on various social medias. We have a podcast. But yeah, mokocheag.org is our website, and a lot of valuable information to our work. Feel free to check us out and follow us.
IFAI would like to thank all of our guests from the last 3 episodes about the poultry industry in Indian Country. We have enjoyed learning from each of these different types of producers or members of the poultry community. If you have questions about anything that we've talked about, look in our show notes, or you can reach out to us at agpolicy@uark.edu or tribalag@uark.edu. And as always, stay rooted in wisdom.